The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Today's world news, what it means, where it's taking us.
I bring you the one and only possible message of world peace.
This is a message of hope, tremendous hope. And he said unto me, you must prophesy again.
The Trumpet Daily Program begins right now.
Is the moment for Britain to choose its future. To decide whether we want to build on the progress we have made or risk going back to square one with no plan and no certainty. Earlier today, I spoke with His Majesty the King to request the dissolution of Parliament. The King has granted this request and we will have a general election on the 4th of July. This election will take place at a time when the world is more dangerous than it has been since the end of the Cold War.
Hello and welcome to the Trumpet Daily Show. This is Richard Palmer standing in for your regular host, Mr. Stephen Flurry, and we're coming to you from our campus in Edstone, England, for an important reason. We just had some dramatic news last night out of the UK. There was Rishi Sunak and the cold open standing in the rain, announcing that we'll be having an election. In another just couple of months, we will almost certainly have a new government and a new prime minister here in Britain. What does that mean? Why? What does that mean for you, whether you live in the UK or the United States or anywhere else around the world? Well, actually, that announcement was excellent timing for us. Earlier today, I sat down with Jim Ferguson, a media commentator, a former politician in his own right, and we had the chance to talk about exactly that. This election, why it matters for the world. We went on to have a fascinating conversation discussing why global politics matters to a US audience or an international audience. We talked about Barack Obama's role in international politics. We talked about elections and political parties in Europe. We talked about Jim's personal history regarding the Trumpet and Herbert W. Armstrong. So no matter how you're watching us, whether it's through our Rumble channel, through Live from America TV, through our website, thetrumpet.com, over the air on KPCG 101.3 on the FM dial in the Edmond, Oklahoma region. However it is, we're very happy to have you with us today, and we're confident we have something for you in our special interview. All right, I'm joined today by Jim Ferguson, the founder of Freedom Train International. Jim's done all sorts of different things in his background. He's been a successful entrepreneur and businessman. He stood for election for the Conservative Party in 2010. He then played a major role with the Brexit Party getting off the ground. I feel like anything I've brought up in some of our just few discussions in the run-up to this, he's got some background there, I think farming, policing, and security. Much more recently, he set up Freedom Train International as this kind of international freedom movement. And I think international is a key phrase in what they do. There are very similar political trends all across the world. And Freedom Train International brings together those that oppose this kind of global far-left agenda, you could say. And a lot of that is done through video interviews. They're posted at freedomtraininternational.org and on Jim's Twitter page. He's very active on Twitter. That's at Jim Ferguson UK. He's got interviews with a lot of medical people with COVID, interviews about migration in Ireland, collapse of the rule of law and crime in America, on Dutch politics. He's been a guest with Fox Business a couple of times. He's regularly appearing on other media. I think you were on the Lembik Opik show last night. I was looking through your Twitter feed this morning. Jim, great to have you. Great to have you with us today.
Well, good morning, Richard. Wonderful to be with you as well. And yes, it's a busy time for all of us, you know, as we see the events of the last 3 to 4 years unfolding before our eyes. It's often talked about on my channel with some of the guests. It's almost like we're in some kind of science fiction film, wondering when we're going to wake up. But, you know, unfortunately, that's the reality of it. But yeah, lovely to be with you. Thank you for having me.
Yeah, I mean, it's a busy 3 to 4 years. It's also kind of a busy 24 hours. Like I had a whole set of questions prepared to ask you yesterday. And then yesterday evening, Rishi Sunak steps out there in the rain and the British Prime Minister and declares that we're going to be holding a general election. I think July 4th has now been set as the date for that. So I feel like I have to start there. And maybe we can get to some of those other questions I had prepared later. What do you make of it? Why are we going for a general election? I think quite a bit sooner. We knew we were going to have one this year. But why now?
Well, it's actually quite a worrying reason why we're seeing that now. I talk to people within the defence industry. I talk to people within that are heavily connected to the British military from time to time. And it's widely known within those circles that Rishi Sunak does not want to be a wartime prime minister. He gets absolutely shaky-kneed at the very thought of being in charge if the country goes to war. And what a lot of the globalists are pushing for is indeed that, a war with Russia on the Ukrainian border with Russia, with the deployment of British forces. So, unfortunately, I've been aware of this for some time. I have spoken about it publicly and openly, not revealing my sources, of course, but nevertheless, I've picked up on this, of course, as well. There are members of the British Parliament who have also spoken about the fact that they do not believe Rishi Sunak wanted to be a wartime prime minister. So the very fact that he's called it now may well be an indication of a potential armed conflict in the making. They've talked openly of conscription. They want to call up young people to fight. And it's gone down, to be honest, Richard, very badly within the populations here in the United Kingdom. People don't really see it as being our business. And I have to say, I tend to agree with them.
Right. Yeah, I've heard that from a few. I guess I saw a few. I was just looking around trying to get a gauge for what, why he held this early. I saw a few people saying, basically, is there some bad news coming before November, which is when people thought they'd be holding an election? Does he know something that we don't? And certainly, I mean, you look at some of the. It is, to me, it's really, you know, most people want the job of prime minister. This is normally what you're fighting to have, and we have reached this situation where people are saying he's done. He doesn't want the job anymore. But then even beyond Rishi Sunak, do you think is this a shoo-in for Labour? Are we getting a Labour government now in the United Kingdom? Do you think that's just a certainty? And what does that look like?
Well, the last polling in the local elections would suggest that actually it's not a shoo-in for Sir Keir Starmer, who heads up the Labour Party here in the UK. For those in the international audience, Sir Keir Starmer heads up the Labour Party, which is traditionally sort of a working class type party, but it's very different to what it used to be. My fellow Scot, Sir Keir Hardie, started the movement in Glasgow many, many years ago. And I think if he came back and looked at what the modern Labour Party was, he would be very, very severely disappointed. The thing is, Richard, we've got what's called the uniparty system. Mm-hmm. And what I mean by that is that the Conservative Party, of which I used to be a member and a parliamentary candidate, has changed beyond all recognition. These are now globalist policies that they're introducing. That's why they're so unpopular. But Sir Keir Starmer has also pledged his allegiance to Klaus Schwab in Davos and the World Economic Forum. So none of those parties are doing what they say they're doing. The Labour Party is no more Labour than the Conservative Party is Conservative. They are Labour and Conservative in name only. And this is a problem that I've identified in Canada and Australia and New Zealand and many other nations, where there's a deep infiltration of globalism and globalist collaborators within our respective countries. And the problem is, people are saying, well, there's nobody to vote for. And I have to say, I tend to agree with them.
Yeah, I mean, I can't remember who said it, but someone kind of made the point that Labour, you go in one direction more quickly. Conservatives, it's still the same direction. It's maybe a little bit slower than Labour. But if you fundamentally disagree with that direction, who do you vote for? And I think that's the big problem for the Conservatives going into this election is, you look at the local elections, you mentioned the polling. Some of those elections Labour did very well, some less well, but I think they didn't. Their vote share in many cases has fallen since the general election, but the Conservative vote had just absolutely collapsed because their supporters didn't turn out to vote. So what do you think if we do get a Labour government? Like, what, how would that be different, say, to what we have right now? Or is it so much of a uniparty that there just isn't much difference?
I think they will accelerate the globalist policies because it kind of fits in with their narrative. They're a very woke party, the Labour Party in particular. You know, he was very happy to bend the knee to Black Lives Matter. He's very happy to say, I don't know what a woman is. He plays along with all of that. And actually, to be honest with you, within the vast majority of the great British public, that's a real turnoff. He maybe thinks that he's currying favour with those on the far left, and indeed he probably is. But I think one of the things to watch closely was the election of George Galloway, mm-hmm. who used to be a member of the Labour Party, but is actually a very outspoken man, another fellow Scot as well. And he's a fantastic orator. I don't necessarily agree with everything that he says. But his major election success as a political candidate to Westminster really shot a shot across the bows of both Labour and the Conservative Party. And indeed, the independent candidates are doing very well. In fact, in the last local elections, there was hundreds of independent councillors that soared past the parties. And I think people are maybe actually looking towards more voting for independent MPs rather than the party system, because the party system has become deeply corrupted and really infiltrated by globalist agendas. And that's not just here in the UK, that's in the United States of America and Canada and all around the world. They have really infiltrated the party system. And of course, they hedge their bets. They infiltrate both the government and the official opposition. And people are waking up to that now, Richard.
But I think, your point about the independents and George Galloway is an interesting one. And I think that's another trend that you see in Britain, in Europe, the United States, is some of those independents that were winning elections in the local election because they were running on Palestine. And they were running on a free Palestine message. And I think you see that in the United States, particularly some of these, Dearborn, Michigan, and some of these areas in the US with a very high concentration of Muslim voters. I've seen some commentary saying, well, this is actually going to be a major problem for the left in some of these places, because particularly Keir Starmer and the Labour Party, where he has this problem where, again, for those of you that haven't followed British politics super closely, we did have Jeremy Corbyn as the Labour leader, who was pretty much out and out anti-Semitic, or at least very close to that. That lost Labour a lot of voters, and Sir Keir Starmer has tried to appear much more moderate to try and win some of those back, especially on Israel and on anti-Semitism and that kind of thing. But now people are saying, well, he's going to lose to these independents and to people like George Galloway, and even Green Party candidates that have been standing on Free Palestine type of tickets. So you have all across the world. I mean, how do you see this is immigration from the Muslim world impacting politics as well as kind of a global trend?
Well, I absolutely agree. And one of the interesting things is quite recently, within days, the Greens in Scotland dismissed 13 of their members for declaring that men and women were a result of biological sex, and that it was a natural thing. And of course, they don't like that, because the Greens have always tried to sell the idea that they are all about the environment and saving nature. And these are the good things. I mean, everybody in the right mind wants to save the planet in terms of pollution and look after the animal species and the planet as we have it. Keep the seas clean and free from plastics. The same with the rivers and our countryside. Who wouldn't want that? But the Greens have been hijacked by a very far left woke ideology that is more interested in trans ideology and pumping this sort of manic type of teaching to young children, even in primary school, with drag queens and people that, quite frankly, should never be allowed near children. So the Greens are infected with this woke mind virus as well. But back to your point about Muslim infiltration within the companies, within our respective countries, it is, in fact, happening on a larger scale than we might have otherwise anticipated. And, of course, when you it doesn't matter so much. I know many Muslim people. They're very decent people. They're traditionalists. They're very much in family values, a bit like we are. But there is an element that is very extremist, and they want to take over and push a particular ideology on the host countries that they go into. Now, that is a problem, because when you see Sharia patrols being set up in Bradford and other places across England, there is a danger that we're going to go into a two-tier justice system where Sharia courts start to hold sway, and there's two-tier policing taking place. If you're a Muslim, it's like hands off, because you don't want to be accused of being Islamophobic. So these are problems that we need to identify. And I don't believe Labour will have the courage to tackle it any more than the Conservatives did. So once again, we're seeing this major problem with globalists who seem to be orchestrating large amounts of illegal immigration in the United States, at the US southern border, France, Germany have been hit particularly hard, but Sweden, there are reports that there are coming out that Sweden is potentially on the brink of civil war because of violent influxes of people coming in and carrying out very, very, very serious crimes and criminal activity there. A lot of violence in Sweden. So these are issues that have to be addressed. But of course, the globalists want a new world order. They want a one world government that they control. And mass illegal immigration, as we've seen in Ireland in particular, is quite literally off the scales. It's bad enough in England and Wales and Scotland, but in Ireland, it's on a whole different level. And I went across there 2 months ago, and I was really quite shocked at what I saw there, Richard. It really is bad.
And this is another of these, again, it kind of comes back to this Freedom Train International. It's in the name of what you do, where it's so many of the same problems. I mean, you mentioned Ireland, Canada. You know, we had some of our Canada staff wrote an article, and I was blown away. I think it's something like 500,000 migrants a year coming into Canada, like just actively being imported by the government. You know, Canada is not close to the Middle East. You don't have to know much about geography to see that. They're not walking there from Syria, or they're not coming across in boats. The government is actively importing, and Canada's population, I think it's about half of what it is in Britain. For them to be importing 500,000 a year, that's a really substantial chunk of their population. Of course, there's the migrant crisis in the United States where, again, the stats, I think it's 1 million or so coming across maybe a year, which proportionally nowhere near as much as Canada, but that's on an absolutely massive scale. So, I mean, I think this is an area where I think we're both in kind of similar boats, where this discussion began with a couple of British blokes talking about British politics. This show is going out on Live from America TV. Our Trumpet Daily show goes out on that TV channel. I think your audience that you typically talk to, a lot of that is international in the United States. You know, why do people need to know about these trends in other countries when there is, and you take the view, well, there's so much going wrong in my country, why do I need to hear about all these other ones? Because I think that's an important part of kind of what we both do, really, is talking about these global trends.
It's very important, Richard. And, you know, when I came back into the sort of the social media side, I'd never really been that involved with it. But I did set up an X account or a Twitter account back in May of 2019 because I was politically active again within the Brexit Party. Ran that account for about 6 months until the general election 2019. And then we got hit with the pandemic. So I went back to the farm, put up fences and kind of did my own thing, but came back on about 3 years later because I was particularly concerned with the direction of travel with the globalist agenda. And very, very rapidly, the channel grew enormously. And of course, I was well received. I was welcomed back into the fold. There was only about 1,800 followers still on the account. It would only ever really grown to within that 6 month period to about maybe 2,400 or something. I was quite surprised there were still people there. But what happened was I felt we needed to do something because it's all very well to talk about these issues and it's good to talk, but actually doing things is really what it boils down to. And I've always come from that kind of mindset. I like to do things and I like to build things, building networks. And that's indeed what I decided to do. I gave some deep thought as to what we were required to do. And then I started to reach out to people in the United States, people in Canada. And I started to talk to people about their geopolitical structures and what was going on. And I learned an enormous amount. And it's very, very important in relation to your point. People need to know that what's going on in other countries is actually very similar to what's going on in our own. So I built this freedom movement over the course of about 15 months. I did it very quietly. I reached out to lots of people in Europe and indeed in the Southern Hemisphere as well, Australia, New Zealand, and found a lot of appetite for doing something like this. And Freedom Train International is all about freedom of speech, freedom of thought, freedom of movement. But it's more than that. This is a movement that is talking now about going to the second stage, the next phase. And that's preparing people for what is coming. And we have a very, very clever mix of people who are very savvy and understand what's going on in the geopolitical mix around the world. And we can help to predict a lot of what's coming. For example, Rishi Sunak deciding to step down now and call a general election may very well be an indication of a war that's coming in the not-too-distant future. Now, we don't always get everything right. We don't have a crystal ball that we can look into, but we can analyse the trends. And there's a lot of intelligence that is coming in from our particular contributors all around the world. We only launched in January, and we have multiple thousands of members around the planet. And the reason that it's growing so much is because we are about to go to the second stage. We've been no secret about that. We're going to be telling people how to prepare and what to do to mitigate and to overcome the challenges that are going to face us all as a human race. And I say that because I do believe that the globalists have a very anti-human agenda. In fact, I do believe they have declared war on humanity itself.
Now, we've talked a fair bit about the globalist agenda. I think the way that we tend to focus more, I think, on this show, on the role that Barack Obama, I think, within the United States, but I also think within this whole globalist movement, that his presidency really was a turning point in terms of, well, even just his whole kind of set with Nancy Pelosi and others within the Democratic Party, playing a key role to, in kind of the same transformation that you mentioned in Labour, away from this kind of working class party and more to a party of the elites with a very different set of values that is more about that is very harmful to its host nation. The role that he played as president of the United States, both kind of bringing down American traditional values at home, and I think a lot of what we're seeing on the college campuses in the United States, you traces back to that, the way that he empowered Iran. I mean, what role do you see him playing in this kind of globalist movement?
A very significant role. And President Obama flew into the United Kingdom just a few weeks ago for a closed-door talk and secret meeting with Rishi Sunak. Now, why is a former president coming in for secret meetings with a current prime minister? That was certainly something that caught a lot of attention. But, you know, you're absolutely correct in what you say. When President Obama took power, he was a great orator, but there was something very, very false and very wrong about his presidency. And I'd have to be honest with you, I love the United States of America. I love the American people. And I had the great fortune of going across to the United States last year. It was about towards the tail end, maybe in the fall of October, November time. And I was on a series of speaking engagements. I was across 8 different states from North Dakota all the way down to Alabama, and met hundreds and hundreds of people when I was speaking to them on stage. And we were talking about the globalist movement and what was going on and why things were happening the way they were. And remember, America is really sort of built on the sort of the mom and pop culture, you know, little stores, little shops, family businesses, farming, of course, and ranching playing a huge part. And we're seeing the risk that's coming to the United States and the people there by this far left and a globalist agenda. And the two are very much intertwined. We have John Kerry, who is the climate czar of Joe Biden, turning around and saying that the reason that the climate is so bad is because of the farmers. And farming is the enemy of humanity, according to him, which is utter nonsense, because farmers actually look after the land. They till the soil, they grow the food. And indeed, this is a very dangerous type of language to be using. Indeed, this happened in Russia in history, where the farmers were blamed.
Well, the kulaks
and of course,
in Ukraine.
They turned. Yeah, exactly. And of course, they turned people against the farmers, and then there was a famine. And I have to wonder if, in fact, the globalist movement are so extreme in their beliefs that they would actually try to capture the food industry. And we've seen Bill Gates buying up huge tracts of farmland in the United States, while at the same time funding NGOs, along with people like George Soros and district attorneys in America, and really destroying cities with lack of order. It's almost like they are sowing and encouraging lawlessness to take place in many cities in America. And we've seen the results of that. Crime is out of control in many Democrat-controlled areas, I have to say. where those influences came in. So President Obama was actually a huge blight on the American people. People just didn't realize it because he talked a good game, Richard. Mm-hmm. But actually, he did a great deal of damage to the people in the United States.
And what about beyond? Like, do you think that his influence, how far do you think it stretches to the worldwide aspect of this movement?
Well, I think he's heavily involved. I mean, he may no longer officially be president, but there are a lot of people that think that he is controlling a lot of things behind the scenes. Indeed, he's in and out of the White House on a regular basis, as is George Soros's son. And you have to say, well, what's really going on there? I mean, I don't think that Joe Biden really knows where he is from day to day. And I think that there is a power that is operating things behind the scenes, almost in a almost like a shadow government. I don't really believe that Joe Biden is in control of the United States. He may be there officially as president, but I think that Obama is playing a very, very, very significant role, much more than people might realize.
Now, you've been quite involved, or you've been traveling around Europe. I think last time, one time when we spoke, I think you were about to make a trip to the Netherlands to meet with some of the kind of the politicians opposing this movement over there. I mean, how we've talked about the similarity, say, of the globalist movement, the similarities of politics in lots of these different countries. What about the opposition to that? There's a whole range of different parties with different levels of success. You know, Geert Wilders is just kind of coming into government now in the Netherlands. I mean, this really is a year of elections. We've got Rishi Sunak. The European parliamentary elections are coming up. I think that's the start of June, so even before what we've got here in the UK. But you've got different parties opposing this radical leftist agenda in different European parties. How much, though, in different European countries, how much do you see them as kind of all being very similar? Or do you think there are important differences between this movement in different countries?
Well, I mean, we talked about Canada earlier on. I mean, when I came back from the United States last year, 10 days later, I went to Ottawa and actually marched with the members of the Freedom Movement. And indeed, I met leaders of the Freedom Movement and the Freedom Convoy in Ottawa while I was there. There was members of the European Parliament there with me. There was some big name influencers there as well as me. And of course, we marched from Ottawa down Parliament Hill and through the streets. And it was a very, very great experience. I met Tamara Litch, I met Chris Barber, I met Harold Juncker and many, many others involved within that. Also, Eddie Cornell within the Freedom Movement, the Veterans for Freedom Canada, for example, played a huge part there too. So made some very, very important contacts. And when I went across to the Netherlands, many of them who I had met in Canada were also there. There was people from Australia, there was freedom fighters from the UK, there was freedom fighters from America went to that particular meeting that I was at. And indeed, there was a conference there, it's called Taking Back Your Future. There must have been about 700 or 800 people there. It was standing room only. And indeed, although I wasn't speaking there, I did speak to a lot of people at the event. I wasn't one of the guest speakers, but there were great guest speakers on stage. And it's quite clear there is an appetite to push back against this globalist narrative. And indeed, I think it's necessary to do exactly that. Geert Wilders, I'm going back to the Netherlands very, very soon. I'm just about to leave for Geneva. I've been invited to a large grouping and kind of a closed door meeting. I was very honored to be invited to the Geneva Project. That's taking place very soon. There's going to be a lot of activity there. And once again, we're meeting with top leaders around the world, and I've been included in that simply because I've been involved within the freedom movement and I've started a freedom movement that is gaining a huge traction around the world right now. So I'm very honored to be included in that. And of course, I will support everybody that fights for their freedom, for bodily autonomy, for truth and justice all around the world. But yes, you're right. There is a change taking place. And Geert Wilders, I don't know if I'll have the opportunity to interview him or speak to him, but I can tell you that there certainly are other politicians that are being lined up right now as we do this interview, who I will be interviewing and going and engaging with in the Dutch Parliament.
So yeah, that I look forward to hopefully seeing some of those, in, especially if there's one with Geert Wilders. I think one of the things that I'm kind of curious about, especially as you're much more inside this, say, than I am, you've talked to a lot more of people that are part of this movement. I look at someone like Geert Wilders, and I have a lot of respect for Geert Wilders. I remember, I think was it Fitna? This is a movie that he made 10, 15 yeah. years ago, where he was speaking out against the dangers of radical Islam. And you had a Dutch politician, I believe it was murdered right around that time or a little before then. And Wilders stepped out there and, you know, he spoke, I think, a truth that a lot of people didn't dare speak and even risked his life to do so. But then you have groups like the Alternative for Deutschland and, say, the National Rally in France and some of these other groups, which often get lumped in with Geert Wilders and with some of these others within Europe. I mean, do you see, say, the Alternative for Deutschland and some of these others, how much are they, say, allies in the fight, part of this? Or do you think, because I don't think I've seen you interacting with, say, AfD politicians. Do you see some danger with some of these groups going too far in, say, the other direction or in an extreme right direction?
Well, I'm all about balance. I'm all about moderation. I can tell you that I've met members of Alternative for Deutschland at different meetings that I've gone to. They don't seem to be extreme to me. They are generally concerned about their country. They're German patriots. And I see nothing wrong with being a patriot and championing your own country. It's why President Trump is so popular, because he does love America. He doesn't always get it right. He's made mistakes in his past life and, you know, in business life. But, you know, at the end of the day, none of us are perfect. But if you love your country, that there's an appeal there, I think, for everybody that loves their own respective countries, for other people. You take Viktor Orban in Hungary, for example. He is a very strong nationalist leader. He loves Hungary, and he has resisted successfully interference for people like George Soros and the NGOs that have tried to go in and cause trouble in his country. In fact, he turfed George Soros, the billionaire, out on his ear and said, "You're not coming in here." And he got the state apparatus to unplug everything that George Soros had tried to do with good effect. So the Alternative for Deutschland party, I don't see them as being a problem at all. In fact, they are rising in the polls spectacularly in Germany. But because they're so popular, because they pose a significant risk to the globalists in the other German parties, they are being ostracized, vilified, and attacked. So I think that what you're witnessing, and remember, let's not forget that Germany has massive, huge illegal immigration problems there as well. It has changed the demographic. Ever since the previous Chancellor, Angela Merkel, stood up and said, "Come one, come all." And of course, Germany got absolutely flooded. And it's caused enormous problems. There has been waves of crime, rapes, murders, assaults on children taking place. But, you know, there are attacks that do take place. We've seen that with Robert Fick, the Slovakian prime minister. He is making a recovery, but he was shot multiple times. Within hours, somebody that I met called Malachi Steenson in Ireland, another political candidate, there was an attempted assassination on him. And just 2 months ago, I stood on the steps of the old post office building in Arconnell Street, where the Irish Rebel Alliance formed and fought in 2019, and he's fine. It didn't impact him, but there was an attempt on his life. So there are people that are concerned about what they see as being extremist views and extremist ideologies, attacking in particular those who are classed as patriots, who might be on the right side of the political divide. And that's a cooler, of course, it's unacceptable. And it's a risk that people like Geert Wilders takes every single day. And in fact, ever since he made that documentary film, he has had bodyguards and special services around him ever since. And he will, of course, as the leader of the Dutch people, he will be there with that sort of degree of protection, perhaps even more enhanced now. But I don't know if I'll get the opportunity to meet him. I would certainly like to. He's certainly a very courageous individual, somebody that I think may help to change the dynamics of the political landscape in Holland in a good way. And of course, the Dutch farmers who have been under the cosh so much with these globalist policies from the World Economic Forum trying to put them out of business, I think are looking to him to maybe give them a little bit of respite as well. Let's hope so.
And of course, there's the Dutch Farmers Party that kind of played a role in some of the political shifts there in the Netherlands, which... No, I was just curious about the Alternative for Deutschland, because this is something that I don't know whether feel conflicted is the right way of putting it, but you look at some of the things going there, and I saw on your website you've written on some of these same things, where you had a young girl in school pulled out of chemistry class because she shared a Smurf meme that was deemed supportive of the AFD, and the police come into our high school and drag her out. You had recently an AFD politician where a court upheld a fine for, I think, 6,000 euros because she shared government statistics about migration, which all of these things are completely ridiculous. And this situation that you have in Germany where you talk about migration and you say, hey, we've taken in more than we can manage, there are problems that come from this, and you make even the mildest comments about immigration and you're automatically smeared as a Nazi. I think that on the one hand, that is really dangerous. And you know, the people that are speaking up about this are absolutely right. At the same time, I subscribe to the Compact magazine. I get their daily emails. I get the magazine from now and again. This is kind of, it puts itself out as the mouthpiece for the AFD. They're certainly very close to Bernard Hucke, one of the top AFD politicians. It's in German. And I think if people read what they say, they would be astonished. Like, it is very much a Germany was a victim of World War II. Their email this morning was talking about, you know, basically how German soldiers are unfairly maligned, how the SS is unfairly maligned, defending this recent AFD leader's comment about not everyone that served in the Waffen-SS was a criminal. They talk about Eisenhower, the conspiracy theories about Eisenhower setting up German death camps to try and kill soldiers after World War. Like, it is really, really dark and extreme stuff that's connected with at least a wing of this party. So as somebody that's had more interaction with the party, I was just curious if you'd seen any more of that, which it sounds like you haven't. But
I haven't, Richard. But I think that you will always find that with any political organization, as I say, I've been a conservative member and activist for a long time. Of course, then I was in the Brexit Party. You will always get people that have different views in the party, and that they might express them, even if they are even elected or if they're political candidates, that might not actually be how the party views things, or the majority of people in that party views things. And of course, you will get people who don't like them to sort of highlight some of the things that maybe some of the more extreme elements have said. But I can honestly tell you, I've never come across that. I've never engaged in any conversations with anybody from the AFD that expressed any kind of comments or views like that to me. I'm not saying that doesn't happen, but certainly I've not come across it. And I think what people are looking for, they're looking for politicians that will speak the truth, but in a moderate way. They're looking for people that will champion the people rather than the globalist nonsense that we've seen spouted out by our respective leaders all around the world. I think people are just looking for honest politicians, and sometimes people will make mistakes. They will say things that they maybe shouldn't have done in the heat of the moment, what have you. I mean, we've all seen that happening with different politicians around the world. But I think what people are looking for are trusted politicians that can actually put their own people first. And as I said to you, I see nothing wrong with putting national politics at the forefront for the people of those countries. I believe that that's what good national leaders should do. But the problem is the globalists do not want independent sovereign nations. They want everybody under their banner, with a few sort of elitists at the top that basically run and control everything. And we're witnessing this with Bill Gates, who is doing a power grab within our respective countries with the World Health Organization. And what people don't realize is that Dr. Tedros of the WHO isn't a medical doctor, but in fact, he is a former terrorist with a very violent terrorist organization known as the People's Tigray Liberation Front. And you have to ask yourself, why would somebody like that be in a position of governing our health? And of course, Bill Gates himself funds the World Health Organization to the tune of 86%. So really, the WHO is not an independent organization. So these are examples, along with the United Nations, that are deeply infiltrated by globalists and the people that work for them. And Tedros is more of a puppet to Bill Gates than anything else. See, I don't actually think he's got the skill sets or even the intelligence to be running the World Health Organization, but he's a useful person for them to have in post because he does what they tell him to.
And that brings me to something else I did want to ask you about. You spoke about when you were talking about setting up Freedom Train International, you know, COVID, the role that that played. And obviously, I think COVID is the results of that is a big topic that you talk about there. And I think for a lot of us, myself included, COVID was this big eye-opening moment where, certainly for me, it's not like I had tons of trust in these health experts and in the NHS or anything like that, even going into it. But then all of these kind of great institutions, though, in quotes, were proven not just kind of wrong, but dangerous and actively making things more harmful. I mean, did COVID change your view on any of these things? Did it kind of confirm what you were thinking? Or how did that impact how you see the world?
Well, I'd come out of a very active, very, very intense 6, 7, 8 months of being in the Brexit Party. I wasn't just a parliamentary candidate. I was recruited very deeply into the party. I ended up interviewing many other parliamentary candidates. I travelled all over the country. I was back and forth to Brussels a few times with the elected MEPs that were there at the time and engaged with them in policy and discussions about where it needed to go. So I found myself involved in a much more, I suppose, senior role than I had ever anticipated would happen. So it was a very, very busy period of time. But when COVID happened, I knew that there was something not right almost instantaneously. I remember watching footage that was coming out of China. There was a Chinese doctor that tried to raise the alarm. He got very sick. He ended up dying. There was things, though, that just didn't quite make sense. And there was a lot of red flags going up. When I started to see our respective governments all operating in lockstep, talking about build back better. I mean, Jacinda Ardern in New Zealand, Dan Andrews in Victoria, Australia, Joe Biden, Boris Johnson in the UK, build back better. They were all spouting this same mantra. It became very clear that there was a central intelligence, that there was a controlling mind that was behind all of these national leaders that was actually dictating to them what to say. It was very clear they weren't acting independently. There was something else behind it or above it, depending on which way you want to look at it. And that, to me, raised very significant questions. And I started to look very, very carefully at what was going on. And it became very clear that there was something else behind all of this. It was not a normal type experience that we were witnessing. So COVID was, to me, a bit of an eye-opener. And it made me realize that this controlling mind, this entity, this sort of globalist mindset, or whoever was controlling it behind the scenes, had enormous power. If you can dictate narratives to prime ministers and presidents around the world, you're talking about something or someone with enormous power. They control the media, the narrative. And I think that to me was a bit of a wake-up call, because I could see that this was not a good thing. And that's why I've fought so passionately for freedom within nationalist movements and those that like their freedom and want to be independent and do their own thing effectively. There's nothing wrong with international trade. There's nothing wrong with international cooperation. I'm doing that every single day with Freedom Train International. And we are building a huge, huge consensus all around the world. International partnership's not a wrong thing to do. But what it is a counter to this globalism that is actually very destructive in its nature. It's very dark. And we've seen, of course, Richard, this explosion in excess deaths and vaccine injuries. And, you know, you can't pretend it's not happening. You know, there are certainly platforms out there like Facebook that will not talk about it. If anybody tries to talk about it, they will shut you down.
Yeah, we used to be on YouTube.
The question is,
we got kicked off YouTube exactly. For talking about vaccines.
Well, that's a good example. YouTube do censor. I mean, if it hadn't been for Elon Musk, I have to say, I know he gets criticized, but when Elon Musk bought over Twitter, he did the world a great service for truth, for freedom, for justice, because there is a platform here that is relatively free to speak whatever you want to say, provided you're moderate and provided you're not obviously being ridiculous about the things that you're saying. But he is a proponent of truth and freedom. And I have to say, I've never met Elon Musk, but I do like him. And people say that, you know, he's another agenda or he's a globalist. I don't believe it. He has called out the globalists and he has said, because a lot of those other globalists have said there's too many people in the world, getting into sort of the tone of talk of eugenics, he has said he doesn't agree with that. In fact, he thinks there should be more people, that the planet can sustain many, many more people. And I think that he is on the side of the people of this planet. But if it had been for him, I wouldn't be talking to you today. So I think we have to give credit where credit's due, Richard. But yes, the whole COVID pandemic, I think, was the opening salvo by the globalists. And it's all about control. When you talk about 15-minute cities, smart cities, central bank digital currencies, and of course, the first hurdle and battleground, of course, is digital ID. We've seen the Australian Senate pass that through. We've had people like Senator Babette and Malcolm Roberts and others challenging the narrative down there. But, you know, they're fighting a hard battle. But a lot of the people in the Australian Senate are World Economic Forum members. They are sold out to the globalist movement. They're not really, in my opinion, serving the interests of the Australian people there. And we are starting to see that spread into our nations. There are 15-minute cities and being prepared in America, in Canada, in England, quite literally all around the world. So the question is, why do they want to control everything? Why do they want to control people and turn effectively the planet into a prison planet? Because that looks like what they're trying to do.
Yeah. Well, I think that brings me to the kind of the last discussion I wanted to have here, because I know you're a longtime subscriber or were to our magazine, The Trumpet. And you know that we have a religious message that we put out alongside of this our news message, and indeed that's a big part of the reason why you wanted to talk to us. And I think that was one of the messages that we hit really hard with COVID, not to take away at all from the very kind of practical Barack Obama, George Soros, the links around the world. But you talk about a controlling mind. I mean, at the heart and core of, not the most important, but one part of the messages that we were getting out, I think, during COVID was, this is evidence of a lot of what the Bible talks about, and that there's a spiritual dimension to the news. There's an evil spirit world, that's a big part of the reason why some of these ideas find such ready ground all over the world, that it's being that it's being supported through this, that this is being pushed by Satan, by a being opposed to. There's a plan for the world, and there's a being that's opposed to that plan. I think that's a fundamental part of what we were trying to get out. And there's a, in some ways, there's a dark message there. But in some ways, the fact that, well, in the most important way, that there is a plan, that there is a book of the Bible that makes sense of everything that is happening in the world and can show us a lot of what is happening next, and indeed the most important outlines of what is happening next, and that this is what you need to understand the world, was a big part of the message we were getting out during COVID. So maybe we could close with a bit of a discussion, as much of an interview about that, and about what kind of attracted you to the Trumpet's message and what you see as the world needing to understand there.
Well, it must be 25 years, 30 years ago, perhaps. I sometimes lose track of time a little bit. But, I as a young guy, started to search for answers. I wanted to know what was really going on. I have an inquiring mind. I happened to come across Gerald Flurry. Gerald Flurry was the sort of the host of the Trumpet magazine, the trumpet.com. And, of course, he was heavily involved with the Philadelphia Church of God as well. And I started to listen to some of the things he was talking about. And became a subscriber to the Trumpet magazine and avidly read some of the things and the teachings that he was talked about. And of course, there was a chap called Armstrong who kind of started it all off. He was an incredible world ambassador, a very, very well known. He knew kings and he knew princes and he knew politicians at the time. And he spoke about a lot of things that have come to pass, like the rise of Germany, and people laughed at him when he said, hey, because Germany was a smoking ruin at the time that he was saying these things. And of course, what he said has come to pass. So I've read with great interest the teachings and the things that General Flurry has said. And I would encourage people to go and listen to what they've got to say. Of course, I think it's his son Stephen Flurry who is now taking up the mantle of that. And
well, he hosts the Trumpet Daily, but Mr. Gerald Flurry, he's still. I'm trying to remember how old he is. He's getting up there in his late 80s, but he's still around. He's still producing his Key of David show every week, and indeed, still kind of writing the leading articles for the magazine. So. Yeah, his son has taken up some of the burden of that, but he's still very much involved in the work.
Yeah, and it's great to see that, you know, because he's got a very, very good way of explaining all of that. It's very moderate, you know, it's very sensible. And of course, he evidences a lot of these things as well. But yes, so I started my journey in looking for the truth a long time ago. And I mean, there is no doubt, absolutely no doubt in my mind, Richard, that the things that we're seeing taking place in the world around us, that there is a hidden dimension, that there is another part to it, and it is a spiritual part. And I can honestly tell you, I've experienced and seen things that most people haven't. And you know, there's no doubt about the power of prayer, and the fact that there are forces of good at work as well. I think we all sort of tend to focus too much on the dark side. And of course, it's got that glamorous image to it. People seeking power for power's sake. You know, you've seen so many people saying that they've, you know, sold their souls for power and money and fame, and people laugh. But actual fact, there's a lot of truth to that. And of course, they'll pay a terrible, terrible price. But you know, when all is said and done, we are witnessing some darkness in this world. But the good thing is, the Bible talks about, in fact, about a third of the Bible actually talks about prophecy, and everything that the Bible prophesied before it happened has come true. That's the startling thing. Even Israel gathering again as a nation, I mean, that is highly prophetic, and it is almost like God's timepiece. If you're watching Israel and you're watching what's going on there, a lot is hinged into that. Whilst people may not be religious, and by the way, the term religion means different things to different people. I would never particularly call myself being religious. I am a man of faith. And the reason I'm kind of resistant to the term religious or religion is because it has different connotations for me, and sort of very kind of problematic in terms of some people or some churches who have used it to do bad things. So I prefer to talk about faith. I prefer to talk about Christians and not so much denominations, because once again, I think the important thing is that we recognize the commonality of what we have within the different churches, within the different family of Christ. And of course, there are many different brands of that, if you want to call it that, denominations. I think the most important thing is to focus on what unites us rather than that which divides us, because the enemy uses division all too often, black against white, left against right, all the different divisions they can conjure up. Because it's like this: if you imagine a triangle and you've got the point at the top and you've got the two points at the bottom, most people are along this line here, along the bottom line, and we are focused on each other all the time. We should be looking up, because this point up here, they're the ones, the controlling mind that I was talking to you about. It's a little bit like young schoolboys sometimes that maybe like to look at ants' nests, red ants, black ants, and occasionally put them together to see what will happen. And most of the time, nothing happens. But if the jar gets shaken, they will rip each other to pieces. And that is what I see in this sort of triangular type thing that's going on just now. The people at the top, the globalists, the elitists, whatever you want to call them, they're shaking that jar. And everybody else is on the bottom, is focused on each other, when in actual fact, we should be focusing on that which unites us. And Freedom Train International is very much focused on that. We talked about Germany. We've talked about Ireland. We've talked about a lot of nations where there is history, where there is violent history. Even the British Empire had a violent history past as well. Although I'm a great defender, I think they did a lot of good things too. But there were dark moments in all of our histories. We've all been around for a long time. Quarrels, disputes, wars, all sorts of things. But right now, the message for me as the founder of Freedom Train International is this: we must never forget our history, but it's time to put old disputes aside. Every patriot, every person that loves their family and their traditions and their countries needs to unite together. And Freedom Train International is bringing people together in unity with strength. And I would like to think that the good powers will help us to continue to do that.
Great. Well, I guess that's a great point to end on. Thank you so much for joining us today, Jim. I think it's been just a really interesting, wide-ranging discussion there. We've hit on, I think, quite a lot of points that should be of interest to quite a lot of people. So, thanks for coming.
Well, it's been my absolute pleasure. And please pass my kindest regards to the teams that are working within the Trumpet, the Philadelphia Church, in particular, Stephen and Gerald Flurry. I think they're great people. And I've never spoken to them and never met them. But who knows? Maybe one day I will. We'll see.
Sounds great. Thanks for coming. So that was my interview with Jim Ferguson. We both enjoyed ourselves tremendously. We'd be very happy, I think, both of us, to do something like that again. So if you have any comments, any thoughts, please do let us know at td@thetrumpet.com. And we talked about the Trumpet magazine towards the end there. We just sent our latest issue to the printer last week. We've got some great material in there from Mr. Flurry on Germany and Iran. We've got a write-up of Dinesh D'Souza's interviews from the other week on this show. We have the lost secret of financial security and much, much more in that issue. You can get a free subscription to that at our website, thetrumpet.com. You can read it there too, but we'd be very happy to send you a free print version so that you can get it out and really digest it in much more depth than you can on a screen. You can, of course, browse all of our other material, all of our books and booklets, and get your own free print copies there. And if you're in North America as well, you can give us a call for free on 1-866-930-3024. And we'd be happy to give you that subscription or send you any of those booklets or books. Well, that's about it from me. Thank you so much for joining us. Mr. Stephen Flurry should be back tomorrow, and we'll be back with our regular section of material. So please do tune in then, and goodbye.